Hello and welcome to episode 7 of series 5 of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. My name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. We've got over 100 episodes, previous episodes at our website, engagingic.com, and available on all major podcast platforms. And if you're returning to the show, well, welcome back. Just to let you know what we've got coming up in our next two episodes. On the 26th of March, we have an interview with Tarek Kamil from Circle. Tarek's going to be telling us all about the impact of AI on internal communications. Artificial intelligence is very much in the news at the moment, and the impact on internal comms is quite profound. So Tarek's going to be telling us all about that. And then on the 9th of April, I have an interview with Carlos A. Alvarenga. Carlos is going to be telling us all about the rules of persuasion and how persuasion is a really important factor within our communications. I guess we probably all understand that, but he's going to be talking to us about all about the science of persuasion and also how it can be manipulated as well, which is, again, I'm sure something we're familiar with all that is going on in the world at the moment. So that's what we've got coming up in our next two episodes. I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to keep it really short this week and let you get into this episode's interview. If you listened to the last episode of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast, you'll have heard my interview with Michelle Jimmer, where we talked about the salary gap or the pay gap and the phenomena that exists there. Leading on from that, today we're going to be exploring challenges with retention, turnover and absenteeism. Now, they're not only solely due to salary challenges or just pay, but that is often an issue that will drive retention or turnover within our organizations. But we're going to go beyond that in this interview, and we're going to look at other issues that affect retention. So we're going to start off by looking at the retention landscape, if we can call it that. What is happening? What is driving turnover within organizations? Is there a level of turnover that we should be accepting? That turnover in and of itself is a natural phenomenon in any organization, and a certain level of turnover is healthy. But are there limits to that? What are the costs of turnover, and how should we be looking to address those through a retention strategy? But then looking at what are the drivers of retention, so financial drivers of retention and non-financial drivers of retention. And we're going to finish off by looking at what the role of a line manager is, our line managers who look after and manage our people. What is their role in helping us to drive retention and to prevent turnover of their people? So what are the skills and challenges that we have in terms of developing our line managers and holding them accountable for our retention issues where it's appropriate as well? So that's what we're going to be looking at in this episode. How do we deal with retention, turnover and absenteeism, and what are our roles within that as internal communicators and employee engagement professionals? So that's what this interview is about. My guest today is Douglas Brown. Douglas is an expert in reducing employee turnover and absenteeism. Managing a workforce in today's economic and social climate is not always easy, and Douglas equips business owners and senior executives with the tools to identify key retention risks, understand the impacts of high turnover rates, and implement effective solutions. So, good day to you, Douglas. How are you?
Well, Craig, thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to discussing and talking with you today.
Fantastic. Yeah, and it's really good to be speaking to you. So, for our listeners, whereabouts in the world are you so we can position you, please, Douglas?
Certainly. We are located just outside a city called Kitchener-Waterloo in Ontario, Canada.
Wow.
And for those that don't recognize that, it is about 1 hour west of Toronto. And most people would know Toronto. It's our capital of our province, Ontario. But one little tidbit that people might recognize is we are the home of people that used to use a BlackBerry phone. That was invented and developed, and the business grew out of Waterloo, Ontario. So that might be something they recognize.
Very good. Yeah, I think we're probably even our younger listeners will remember BlackBerries, and wow, they were. That was a phenomena that came and went, wasn't it? I mean, I know they're still around, but
they're working. They're primarily focused on software now. They don't do any hardware, but it was quite a success story, really. They grew to unprecedented heights, kind of thing, and then unfortunately it kind of fell apart for them. So
but interesting phenomena though, and you know, I remember every the time when everybody had a BlackBerry, and they were really groundbreaking machines, weren't they? So
they were
fantastic. So I kind of introduced you there, a very brief introduction. Tell us a little bit more about your work, Douglas, and you know, maybe how, also a little bit of maybe a backstory of your own career, how you've ended up doing what you're doing now.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. So I started out actually in the food industry many, many years ago, and for quite a while worked directly in the production, the quality side of foods, and then I got into sales careers. And worked in the chemical industry, actually, and we were selling cleaning agents and detergents and things like that to the food processors to help them clean their equipment. And from there, I moved on to selling industrial chemicals. And then I'm going to say around the year 2000, Craig, I started a business called Recognition Rewards. And the intent of that business was really to help my children. They were kind of young at the time and getting into their teenage years, and wanted to show them a little bit about the business world and earn some money and, you know, help them along with that regard. And it was really a part-time business, but it enabled them to kind of learn some of the best practices, some of the issues surrounding, you know, procuring products and selling them to business owners, and some of the administrative issues and different things involved in running the business, I guess. So we did that for several years, actually still doing a little bit today. And then around the year 2008, we had saw an opportunity and recognized the need to go beyond recognition. I always felt recognition was really one of the cornerstones of employee engagement. It was really important to make employees feel valued and appreciated, and as such, they'd maybe be a little bit more motivated and invested in their jobs and their careers. And I still feel that way today. It is very important, but we recognized there were other factors as well. So we had opened up a company called Engage to Perform, and that company ran employee engagement surveys for about 12, 13 years. And so during that period, we really had a chance to do a deep dive into employee needs and their goals and their aspirations and their concerns and their challenges and disconnects and all those kind of issues that really gave you a really sound, strong understanding of workforce issues, workplace issues, you know, what challenges are out there and maybe what could be done to address them, and this kind of information, this kind of data. And then in, I say, 2020, 2021, around the time that the pandemic hit, we started to read a lot about the Great Resignation. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners were familiar with this. This was statistically true. The turnover rates were increasing and fairly significantly.
Yeah.
And I think it was related to people stepping back a bit, maybe reevaluating their life and their goals and, you know, determining or assessing, you know, whether they were on track for their career, whether they were where they want to be, whether they were enjoying their work, lots of things like this. And we felt we had some solutions to offer, and it was primarily focused around the manager and helping him build stronger relationships with their employees. And so anyways, we opened up a business called Manage to Retain, and that is what has brought us to where we are today. And I'll end with just saying that Manage Retain, as you mentioned earlier, is focused on, our mission is to help business organizations, small to medium primarily, help reduce employee turnover and strengthen their employee retention strategies. So that's what we're doing right now.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned there about the, you know, the great resignation. I think that's that kind of resonates around the world. I think a lot of, it was certainly not just a buzzword. It was certainly a phenomenon in the UK. And I still think the shockwaves of that are still rippling through the employment landscape. I still think it's still an ongoing phenomena. So on that basis, then, Douglas, I mean, what is the current landscape at the moment in terms of retention, turnover, absenteeism, and I guess, you know, I guess it's worth maybe pointing out the data set. Is it North American? Is it Canadian? Is it kind of a global phenomenon? And I think, you know, as I said, I think it's a fairly ubiquitous thing that's going on in a lot of the developed countries, capitalist countries around the world. But what does the data tell us at the moment? And what's driving some of these trends, Douglas?
I'll try and elaborate a little bit on that, Craig. First of all, I think that the retention turnover issues have declined a little bit. And by that, I mean, a few years ago, there were, you know, kind of unprecedented, or there certainly was getting much higher than we had seen. And that, you know, when you look back into the 2008, 2009, 2010 era, turnover rates had almost doubled since then, when, you know, in the early 2020s. And that has subsided a little bit. But I will say this. I think what our surveys and poll results and different research shows is that it doesn't mean that turnover is going away. It definitely doesn't. And, you know, when you look at some of the information, you'll see that still, you know, 40% of people are actively looking for a new job. And then you probably have another 30 or 40% that maybe aren't actively looking, but they're open. If the headhunter calls them with the right position and the right opportunity, they could leave. So I think organizations and businesses always have to be a little bit careful and a little bit wary that it has settled down a little bit. But at the same time, you know, it could rear its ugly head, so to speak, again, and be an issue. And there's a couple other comments I'll make. First of all, you know, when we look back, we see a lot of the traditional issues that affect employee turnover. And these are things like compensation is certainly one, although I think a lot of people feel it's often more important than some of the other non-financial aspects, and that's not the case. But cost of living is going up, so definitely that's an issue. But then you have some of the other traditional things like lack of recognition, lack of autonomy, lack of growth and development opportunities, relationships with your manager, and so on. And so those are still there today. There are still issues. But what I will say, or what I wanted to say, is that there's new issues that are emerging, and this is the result of, I'm going to say, have come to light since the pandemic. And these are things like, work from home or hybrid working models. Yeah. You know, sometimes you see companies wanting their employees to come back to the office, and some employees are saying, listen, if you're mandating that, I'm going to look for another job.
Yeah.
Or you'll see, I think some of the younger generation particularly wants more work-life balance in their roles. With our new digital world, sometimes they're on call or have to be on the phone, whatever, 24/7. And it can become stressful and these issues. And then the other thing, of course, is the growth and increase in mental health. And people want to have a life outside of work. And so, and then you've got new generations in the workplace and DEI issues and ESG and so there's new issues that are becoming relevant and important to that employee turnover, and those are factors as well. So I hope I've answered your question.
Yeah, definitely. We'll delve into some of those in a little bit more detail, Douglas. And I guess one of the things I was going to ask you next is I guess there's, you know, intuitively we recognize that turnover has a cost, and we'll talk a little bit about that. I guess also, I mean, I'm just thinking back to my kind of days and HR and kind of being immersed in that world. And there was always a kind of an acceptance that, you know, you're never going to get to zero turnover. And actually, that's probably not a healthy place to be. You always want to get a bit of natural turnover and recycling and bringing in new talent and fresh ideas. I guess the danger is when that is all, you're kind of, you know, you're kind of A-list people, your best people who are kind of turning over. And, you know, again, without being disparaging, maybe you've got a lot of people who are staying who, you know, actually probably would benefit from doing something else with their lives or would be happier.
Yeah.
So I guess two questions there is, is there a healthy level of turnover, or is that kind of really, really context specific? But also, what are some of the maybe hidden costs of you know, high levels of turnover on the organization beyond, you know, just having to recruit more people and train more people? What are your thoughts on that, Douglas?
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll answer your first question first. I don't think that there is any one number that, you know, is a good turnover rate. You know, industries vary, and we see turnover much higher in certain sectors when, as a couple of examples, you see maybe the trucking industry, or you see the hospitality industry, with the restaurants and the hotels. You see it sometimes high in call centers. And so there's a number of sectors out there that, and some of those turnover rates, Craig, can get very high. Like you're talking 40, 50% kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then you have other ones that are a little more stable. You know, I think they're always changing too. It depends on the industry and it depends on the company and things like that. But, you know, I think on the low side, you might get down around 5 to 10%. But what I always encourage business owners and senior executives to do is establish a number that makes sense for them. And, you know, just to stay off course for a moment here, this is a quick analogy, if you will. There was an organization that had a computer stolen, and you know the senior managers were upset and were furious, and you know, how did this happen, and why did it happen, and we're going to put in place these controls, and we're going to get to the bottom of this, and we want to make sure this never happens again for a $600 computer. And at the same time, when a $100,000 employee walks out the door, really not too much happens. And, you know, they don't investigate. They don't really try to understand why. They don't put in measures to move forward with some confidence that it won't happen again. So that's maybe a silly analogy.
No, it's a good one, though.
Point. And the second part of your question, I just refreshed my memory. It was related to.
It was more around the idea of what are some of the hidden costs? Not just the direct costs of replacing people and retraining people, but you know, I guess in terms of loss of knowledge and
there's many. In fact, I would say, Craig, that the hidden costs are and the indirect costs are often more equal to or more than the direct cost.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got the direct cost, the hiring cost, you might have to fly somebody in, you've got to run ads in the newspaper or online or whatever it might be. But the indirect costs, things like overtime, impact on company brand and morale, loss of knowledge, customer relationships. You could lose perhaps a valuable salesperson that had very strong customer relationships and knowledge of the customer's needs, and that's invaluable. And so there's those factors. There's things like loss of productivity. There's quality issues sometimes. There's a range of things that really, when you sit down and analyze them, these costs are significant and they're substantial. And I don't think, you know, people maybe truly understand or truly go through the exercises of understanding what the loss of a valuable employee means. And these things can drag on for, you know, several years. I think studies show that it takes somebody, a new employee, at least 3 or 4 months to get up to speed in terms of productivity and performance and things like that. So, you know, there's a considerable period. And the other comment that I'll make is that in a lot of industry sectors now, Craig, you're starting to see labor shortages. And so it's getting more difficult to sometimes replace a lost employee with the new recruit that has the qualifications and the experience that you want. Mm. And that I've seen cases where that's taken a year, year and a half.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, when you look at that, the impact, you know, where the extra workload is kind of built, you know, it ends up being on the shoulders of the remaining employees and they're not too happy about it. And so yeah. there's a lot of indirect costs.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, the subtext to that is it is something the organization should be concerned around and not, like you say, using your computer analogy, it's not just also balancing the priorities as well in terms of making sure that they are kind of treating it seriously. So you mentioned there before that with that last conversation around the fact that there's two aspects of financial and non-financial, which is you know kind of affects people's intention to stay or whether they're going to leave an organization, or in some cases stay and quit at the same time, which is a phenomenon I'm sure you're familiar with in North America as well, which is the kind of checked out employees who are just there in body only. So I guess the financial elements, you know, we could talk about those. I kind of like to explore some of the non-financial elements, though. And obviously, if you've got anything to add around salary and benefits, then let's go there. But I think it's the kind of for this audience on this podcast, it's probably more of the kind of intangible and non-financial elements. And I know you mentioned, and we've got some notes that we made before this in terms of, you know, kind of diversity, inclusion, psychological safety, hybrid working, work-life balance, mental health. There's a lot of things, areas we could cover there. I mean, what does your research tell you in terms of that balance between financial and non-financial, but also, you know, what can organizations probably be doing better to manage some of the non-financial elements, which would in some way take the burden off, you know, just the paycheck. Yeah. It's a whole package, I guess.
It is the whole package, Craig. And I'll maybe mention for your listeners, I'm involved and I work closely with a group called HR.com. Mm. It's an international HR online platform. And many of your listeners may have heard of that. And
yeah.
We recently conducted a survey called State of Retention. And, you know, the findings were quite interesting. And if anybody wants them, they can reach out and I'm happy to send them. But one of the things that struck me there is we always try and determine if employee retention is a priority, number one, and it is a priority. It's becoming more of a priority, I should say. But the second thing is we always try to assess where people are in their employee retention strategies. And it ranges from, you know, beginning to ad hoc to, you know, more developed programs and then to more advanced programs. And what we find is that the majority of the companies, it's a fairly high majority, don't have employee recognition strategies in place that go beyond the financial side of things. And by financial, we're talking, you know, comprehensive. And by that, I mean salary, benefits, incentives, bonuses, perks, whatever it might be. Mm. So I think there's a lot of growth and opportunity to do more with the non-financial side.
Yeah.
And I say that because when our research and our interviews and all the data we've collected indicates that money is not the number one reason that employees leave. And I'm not saying it's not important. It's definitely important with the rising cost of living and so forth. But and everyone's unique. So they all have, you know, when people go to work, they all have their own expectations, their own goals and needs. But I always recommend or suggest to owners that people have a choice where they want to work and for who they want to work for, and that isn't a given. You know, they do have that choice. So what other factors beyond everybody gets a salary, so that's a given.
And yeah,
but beyond that, what are the other factors that would, you know, build some trust, build some relationships, build some a strong employee experience that are meaningful and rewarding and these kind of things to employees. And then you start to look at, you know, things like autonomy and the ability to work with some independence. You look at being appreciated and valued for the work that you do. You look at teamwork and morale and camaraderie and those kind of things. You look at the opportunities to grow. And I mentioned develop. I mentioned, I think, a couple of those earlier. And there's probably about, I'm going to say, 18 to 20 major, what we've identified as major employee retention drivers. And I think they're all very important. Again, depends on the individual because they're all a little bit unique. Some people maybe want more autonomy. Some people maybe want more, you know, more people-oriented. They want to socialize with their colleagues, have a good relationship with their manager. Communication is strong, those kind of things. It depends individually on what they need and want. But when some of those needs and wants that are important to the employee are not being met, then you start to get some negative emotions, some negative feelings about their career, about the work that they're doing. And, you know, I think most psychologists and psychiatrists would tell us that when we make major decisions in our lives, they're almost always driven mostly by our feelings and emotions, yeah, not by sitting back and logically or rationally looking at something. Those emotions play a strong role. So when they get the call from the headhunter or the recruiter, they're much more likely to say, yeah, tell me a little bit more about that. If they're frustrated, if they're, you know, disappointed, if they're, you know, they don't have a good relationship or whatever it might be, then they might take that call and listen.
Yeah. And I guess it varies from industry to industry as well, doesn't it? Because I mean, you mentioned earlier around, you know, kind of turnover in certain sectors around kind of logistics, you know, drivers and there are other industries where, you know, people will leave, you know, just for a couple of dollars or pounds extra a week, you know, because it's very commoditized. You know, they're the labor market there is very commoditized. It's literally, as long as you can do this role, you know, we will have you. And therefore, people do tend to move around based on where they can get the most money. But like, well, as we're moving more into kind of a knowledge economy and information businesses, then, you know, and even in those kind of commoditized sectors, I think there's opportunities to, you know, give people more than just the salary, give them opportunities to be involved and be autonomous and feel as though it's an organization that's looking after them as well and to appreciate that as well.
That's true. And they have maybe more something that's more important in terms of meaning and purpose in their work and things like that. But I think you're right. There are industries that, you know, maybe see higher rates of turnover, and it's just the nature of the industry. I go back to that hospitality or restaurant trade. I think you'll see a lot of sometimes students or sometimes transient workers that are looking for something better and they want to move forward in their career. And if they don't see that opportunity in the job that they're at, they might be looking for others. But, you know, you're seeing that too in some. You know, I think there are some generational impacts as well, Craig, and I do believe that the younger generation is much, maybe doesn't, you know, there's been some debate about this, but they maybe don't have a strong sense, I don't want to use that word loyalty, but I think they're more open to a move quicker if the right opportunity came along. So that can be in the tech world, it can be in, you know, the healthcare sector, the financial sector, whatever it might be. I think their waiting span to see some movement towards what they aspire to is perhaps a little shorter. And if they do get offered something higher and they think that it can help them take a step forward, they might be more open to that.
Yeah.
There's also that generational aspect.
Absolutely, yeah. And we've covered this on previous episodes. I think that, you know, again, going back to some of the drivers of retention and motivation and engagement that you were talking about earlier, I think there's definitely, you know, and I don't think it's just purely a generational thing, but I think there's certainly a sense of wanting to work for an organization that is genuinely doing good in the world as well. I think that maybe when I think back to early days of my career, you know, that wasn't a predominant driver, whereas I think it's a lot more important now for people. And I you know, I also think, you know, all of the things you've talked about as well around the whole package and development and opportunities to grow and learn. We've also, I remember linking back to a couple of episodes we've covered in the past where we've talked about that, you know, and I remember this from my own career where people have left and then have come back. And I think there's also that sense of, I know it's not necessarily a retention strategy, because if people leave, that kind of contradicts retention. But when people leave and then they come back because they actually realize it was a really good place to work, I think, you know, making it possible for people to do that. I know that's a kind of expensive way of doing retention, but I know from my, you know, and we've talked about this on a previous episode with a guest where we talked about alumni, you know, where there's people who have left, but this tends to be obviously for more kind of senior roles, but people who stay in touch with the organization and still have that affinity with it. And, you know, we'll kind of be an advocate for that that's a good place to work and a good place to stay as well. Yeah. It's a really, really complex landscape, I think, now, isn't it? The whole.
It is, Craig. And I think you're right. I think, you're probably seeing maybe a little more of that, where people may leave an organization but come back years later. Mm. And, you know, I think that's one of the challenges a little bit with exit interviews is, you know, you're asking maybe questions about, especially if you've lost a valuable employee, you know, what were the reasons behind it, or what prompted you to make a move, or what issues were concerns here. And I think employees are often a little guarded in answering those questions, and you know, because you never know what happens down the road. I think that, you know, they're not maybe going to identify specific issues, but I think it's always good to leave on good terms, and maybe keep the door open and keep those relationships open, and you know, down the road, the businesses the economy is changing so quickly. Who knows what's going to happen in the down the road? So I think it's good to maybe do that and keep the doors open and so on.
Burning bridges is never a good strategy, from my experience.
No, it's not.
Yeah. just final couple of questions, Douglas, around the role of line managers. And again, it's a topic we've covered many times in previous episodes. And I think often from an engagement and commerce perspective, it's kind of, we recognize that's a big issue, but we very rarely do anything about it meaningful in terms of helping them improve their role. I mean, from your perspective, line managers, the role that they play in satisfaction and commitment of employees to the organization, and therefore retention, de facto, you know, kind of making that connection. What are your thoughts around that role and how critical that is?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I have some different ideas and thoughts on this. So I'll maybe start by saying this. I do think the managers play a crucial role. In my opinion, and in our opinion, we feel it's probably the most crucial role, or they're in the strongest position, let's say, to influence and impact those 20 retention drivers that I mentioned before. But having said that, they can't do it alone.
No.
And you know, I think it's incumbent on senior leaders and owners to say, hey, retention's important. We invest a lot of money in our talent. We help them try and train them and develop them. And you know, we pay them a salary. We give them, you know, vacation. We do a lot of things for them, especially if it's a valuable employee. I think there has to be a commitment from senior leaders and owners that say retention is important. And we want to make sure that we retain our talent as best as we possibly can. So I think that's a starting point. And I say that because programs and policy and these kind of things all start at the top, or generally start at the top. They're the ones that invest the monies. They're the ones that set policy, that set the vision for the company, that set the goals and the priorities for the company. And if it's lacking, if it's not important to them, chances are that it really isn't going to be a focus area. It's not going to be invested in and committed to. There's not going to be goals established around it. So I think they play a critical role too. There's no doubt. But I think you know, once they make that commitment, then I think, you know, the HR gets involved. They can maybe help source programs. They get involved, of course, in recruiting and training. But then back to the managers, I think they do play a very, very critical role because in our understanding, first of all, they don't really always realize maybe how critical their role is in retention. So I think there's some work to be done around helping them understand why their role is so critical, why their leadership style is important. You know, why, how they communicate with employees and treat employees is so paramount or important. So that's maybe step number one. And then I think you can get into skill development and training where you can help them understand what are the keys that employees are looking for? What are those main retention drivers and why are they so important and these kind of things. And then I think, you know, once you start to provide some of this basics and support and resources for your managers, then you can maybe start to hold them accountable for retention.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important as well, because I don't think you can say, well, it's not my fault. It's HR. They're the ones that are responsible for retention. So I think it starts with understanding and education and then it goes into more advanced kind of or some skill and training development and these kind of things. But the other thing that I think I'll mention as well that could be important, Craig, is that I think it's important to have a process in place. And I'll tell you the reason why. I think that training is good and it's a good starting point, but I don't think it really has a chance to make a tremendously positive impact, because when people go back to their office and they get swamped with the day-to-day responsibilities, oftentimes they overlook some of those things they've learned, or they maybe don't act on them. So in order for it to really become a new behavior or a new habit or something that they build into their leadership style, I think if you have an active ongoing process that kind of supports that, then you can really start to see results. And so I think I did want to mention that's important as well.
Yeah. I agree. No, I think it is an area that is often overlooked. And I think, you know, I think actually, I know you didn't mention it explicitly, but you kind of implied it. I think, you know, we need to start holding managers to account, not just departmental managers, but line managers, in terms of, you know, if we're seeing trends in terms of turnover and exit interview data that indicates that there's a problem there, then that, you know, they need to feel as though, you know, that retention is a key part of their role. It's not just the HR department who decide what the salary and those things are. It's a key part of their role. Mm.
And I'll just say one other comment. Yeah. I think I've mentioned this a little bit before as well, but you know, when I look at some of the things that are really important to employees in their careers and, you know, growth opportunities or flexibility so that they can get away to watch their son or daughter play a sports event, or, you know, feeling appreciated for the work that they do, or, you know, the list goes on again for those 20 drivers. Mm. Often it's the manager that will give that employee some flexibility in their schedule. The manager might, you know, help them if the employee aspires to get into a customer facing role. Maybe that manager can introduce them to the customer service manager. They might be able to arrange some training for them to help them build the skills necessary.
Yeah,
that manager is often the one that knows what the employee's strengths are and what they've achieved and when they've gone above and beyond, and can take the steps to say thank you and listen, we really appreciate it, or recognize the employee in some way. So this is where I really feel that the manager has a key impact or a very influential impact on those retention drivers.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, that's been fantastic, Douglas. Thank you. And I think, again, it's one of those areas on the last episode before this one, we were talking to my guest around the kind of the pay gap. And that's another phenomenon, which is the gap between, you know, what males and females are paid in organizations. I think it's interesting to follow up with this, which is that, you know, we've got into a lot more of the non-financial reasons. And I think the two episodes work well altogether. And I think, you know, what you've talked about absolutely makes sense. And that final point around the line manager and the quality of line management being a key determinant, which is often overlooked, I think is really, really important. So we're going to put some links into the show notes. And so this is the show notes on the website version on our website, a version of this on engagingic.com. What I'm going to put in there, Douglas, is I'm going to put your LinkedIn profile. I'm going to put a link into your website, which is Manage to Retain, which is manage2retain.com. Mm-hmm. And also you said it's okay if I put your email address in. Is that
absolutely
that okay?
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Out to you. One thing you mentioned actually as well, Douglas, if it's possible, you mentioned the state of retention report that you talked about earlier in the interview. Mm-hmm. Is there a link that we could share in that, or is that if people get in touch with you, you'll email that to them? Is that
if they want to get in touch, it's actually a document. I think there might be a link as well if I did some research on that.
Okay.
But maybe the simplest way is just say hello. I'm happy to share the file that we've got.
And okay.
One last thing, if I can mention Craig, is we do have some additional tools if it interests any of the audience today.
Yeah.
I think one of the challenges is for business organizations and leaders is to know where they stand. And whether there is any unsatisfaction or dissatisfaction is the right word, I guess, within their workforce. And, you know, what are the key areas that maybe could be improved or might need attention? And we have a tool called the Retention Risk Analyzer that can assess, you know, where they are compared to those 20 retention drivers. And that might identify some strengths that the company has. It might identify a few areas where there could be some improvement. So there's that. And then the other one I'll mention quickly is called the Business Case Calculator. And I think that gives people a better understanding of what ROIs could be available to them if they invest in retention strategy and make some improvements in that area. Where can they get a return on their investment? So that might be of interest to your listeners
okay.
as well.
And again, is that it? Contact you, or is there a link to that we can put it?
There is a link on our website. If you go through our website, you'll see it. But again, if they want to reach out to us, I'm more than happy to provide some information.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Excellent. That's very generous. Well, look, it's been wonderful speaking to you, Douglas. Thank you so much for sharing your insights. And I wish you all the best for the remainder of, I know we're recording this in 2023. It's actually going out in 2024, but wish you all the best for the rest of the year. And thank you. Thank you again for sharing your experience and wisdom on this.
Well, thank you, Craig. I've truly enjoyed it, and I always enjoy this as one of my passions that I'm really feel very strongly about. So I had a chance to talk about it, and hope I haven't rambled on too much, but I do enjoy it, and thanks again for the opportunity.
No problem. Thank you, Douglas. Take care.
You as well. Take care.
Thank you. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. If you've got any ideas for episodes you'd like us to cover in future, you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can use the feedback form at engagingic.com. If you're not already subscribed to the show via your podcast platform, please do so. And if you could leave a review for us, that would be absolutely fantastic. We have links to other episodes at engagingic.com. All of our previous episodes are available there. And if you're interested in our visual communication services, our big pictures, our learning maps, our explainer videos, and also our live graphic recording, please get in touch with us again at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. Thank you.